Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound, get ready for an MMA showdown. Now the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducrosse.
Welcome, you're listening to the Sports Warriors on Blog Talk Radio. We are your hosts for this evening. My name, as always, is Tristan Ducrosse, and along my side, as always, is my partner in crime, the one and only, Sean Ducrosse. Oh, you didn't know? Well, you better ask somebody. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the Sports Warriors and the combat sports world proudly presents to you the newest Bellator fighter, the Axe Murderer, Wanderlei Silva. Dang it, T, you went old school. But yes, Bellator signs another legendary fighter. It's one of those things that everybody tends to question about what Bellator is exactly doing. And, well, they do it again. And they signed Wanderlei Silva. It was only a matter of time because a while back posted it and said, you know what, he was going to fight for Ryzen. Then his ban was still there. So, once again, everything that has surrounded Wanderlei Silva, we knew that it was coming down, Sean. It was just a matter of when. When his suspension was going to be lifted. What was next for Wanderlei Silva? It was just a matter of time. And that time is now. Bellator signs another fighter in Wanderlei Silva and brings him across the bout. This isn't a freak show signing the way that I see it. I see this as a good signing, kind of like what I see that Chris Leben signing is good for Bellator because he brings in ratings. He's a fighter. He's a guy that's going to go all out and leave everything out there on the table. And I say Chris Leben because even something that was mentioned even on the social media platform, and one of our boys at Clinch Report even said it himself, Jonathan King, was that he said, well, how about we get a Chris Leben fight versus Wanderlei Silva fight? I absolutely, totally agree 100% that let's put Juan against Chris Leben and watch these two guys slug it out. Bellator continues to do what Bellator does. And their eyes were so focused on ratings, Sean, that it was big news all over the place, too, because just before this news was announced was that Bellator came out and their Bellator 150 broke their own ratings records without a freak show. Not a big tent, and yet they did extraordinarily well in terms of their ratings. So even without the big tent poll, without the big time fighters, they were still able to draw. So they're doing something well in their product. Bringing Wanderlei Silva, they have another marquee player.
Did you just say Ova?
Yeah. But he's now bringing over another marquee player, Sean. And that marquee player is just going to be exactly that as they get ready for another big tent pole event because that's where the Axe Murderer is going to be on. And Tristan, something you touched on a few minutes ago is that you don't view this as a freak show signing. You could go really either way with it, if you ask me. You can go, is it a freak show, yes or no? Absolutely, I think it's a freak show. It can go that route because of the fact that you got Fedor Emelianenko. Not to say that he's past his prime, but it could be kind of go along the same lines of what we just saw with Horace Gracie and Ken Shamrock. It could go that route.
But he has so much left in his tank.
I'm not going to denounce that. But I'm just saying is that you could see the similarities. The one thing I do agree with you, though, is he still a draw? Yeah, he's still a draw. Why is he still a draw? It's for the simple reasons. What's my catchphrase?
Stand and bang.
What does he do?
Stand and bang.
What do fans want to see?
Stand and bang fights.
It fits perfect. Bellator is all about putting on a show for the fans that's going to make you talk, good, bad, or indifferent. We've been saying that for the past year and a half. Good, bad, or indifferent.
It doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, are people talking about you? Yes. Are people talking about Bellator? Yes. Are they talking about Scott Coker? Yes. Who cares what the publicity is?
That's where everybody is so over the top. I mean, dude, it's just like the Donald Trump situation that's out here running for president. Is that it's simple that good press, there is no such thing as bad press. There isn't. Let's just be real. Because if you're talking about it or doing their job, how about you stop giving the fuel to the fire and stop giving this guy more ammo to keep talking, to keep selling himself? Like you wanna say that he's not good for whatever it is, you're wrong. Stop feeding them. Stop talking. Stop giving them something to talk about. Same thing here. Good, bad, or indifferent. If you don't like it, don't support it. But if you can't turn off your TV, you can't turn away from it, or you can't stop listening to the stupidity that's coming out of somebody's mouth, you're drawn to it. Some people like us, some people don't like us, but you're drawn to it because you can't help but be entertained one way or another. Again, it's the whole concept of the love or hate relationship you have with a lot of people. There was one of our buddies, Skippy, posted on our Facebook and tagged us in it about the evolution of MMA. One thing is that you don't have to respect the young bucks that feel like they're self-entitled to certain things, but you have to respect what they've done in this era. Well, that's kind of like how Wanderlei Silva is. You may not like the fact that he's been popped and now suspended by the Nevada Athletic Commission, but one thing you have to do is respect what he's done for the sport and what he can probably still do for the sport. When you put blood, sweat, and tears, literally, in that ring, regardless if it's a squared circle, regardless if it's a circle, an octagon, a decagon, it doesn't matter. Respect is due for the man that has literally paved the way for so many fighters. And that's exactly what this man has done. Wanderlei Silva, like him or hate him, he's coming. He has a 4-fight deal with Bellator. Maybe even longer, depending on how his stint goes. But make no mistake about it that it's coming. And Bellator continues to change up the game and not be afraid. And that's what it is. We've talked about it before. It's not just about the evolution of the fighters, Sean. It's about the evolution of the program and not being afraid to go with the times. That's what it is. That's all it comes down to. Again, another phrase that I use that I've coined is evolution. You have to evolve with the times. If you're afraid to evolve, you won't be successful. And that's what Bellator is doing. You look across the bow at the other organization, and it's the same thing over and over and over again. It's repetitive. Why do you think they have allowed Conor McGregor to run amok? Why do you think they have allowed Conor McGregor to step up to a third weight class? Why? Because it's about changing the game. It's about evolution and growing with the sport. And by growing with Conor McGregor, basically now their flagship, this establishes them in a different category because they're allowing it. They never would have allowed this. But you look at Bellator, they have allowed similar guidelines that, hey, you sell yourself, you sell the fight, we'll promote you, you do you. You do you, boo. That distinguishes everybody. You can't be fearful of change. And by bringing Wanderlei Silva in, it shows that they are not afraid of change, and they are here for the long haul, folks. So like it or not, Wanderlei Silva is going to get a fight. And it's going to be an exciting one.
And I agree with you and the Clinch Report. I agree with you guys. Fighting Chris Leben and Wanderlei Silva, two walking zombies makes perfect sense.
You want to talk about a big tentpole event? Let's put these two bodies inside of a big tentpole event.
Oh, no doubt.
And
show them who's going to stand and bang. Dude, let's look at a car that you could throw right out now for a big tent event, Sean. Let's look at this. You could go Wanderlei Silva, Chris Leben.
Okay, there's one and two. Oh, wait, we just had a fiasco that a lot of people still want to see, folks.
Still, it's going to happen.
Oyce Gracie and Kid Shamrock, okay? Oyce Gracie, Kid Shamrock 2 in Bellator. Chris Leben, Wanderlei Silva.
Oh, you forgot they got Benson Henderson.
Oh, wait, you forgot they got Rampage Jackson back.
You want to talk about a big blowout? Are you kidding me?
One person nobody's talking about. You just said it. Why not have Wanderlei Silva versus Rampage Jackson again?
There you go, from the Pride Days. There you go. How about that? How about that?
Like, why not?
The powerbomb heard around the world. Why not? Stick Rampage inside of instead of a square circle. You stick him inside of a circle in Bellator, and you have a Wanderlei Silva event all over again. How about that? Rampage says he doesn't care who he fights. Okay. Put him against Axe Murder. How about that?
I like that, Sean.
That, to me, is an interesting little fight in itself right there. So, again, Bellator can get so creative. I mean, we saw Bellator break ratings with the Houston event with Shamrock and Hoyce Gracie. You've seen them continue to dominate in ratings now with the latest one in Bellator 150 that we'll talk here after the break. They know what they're doing, people.
Too bad the UFC doesn't know what they're doing because they just had a fight on Fight Pass
that should have been on free TV at least at most.
And it almost broke the internet. Almost broke the internet. The knockout that wasn't a knockout.
I read it somewhere.
Did you see the video?
I did. And I read it somewhere where somebody said that, you know, they need to get rid of this whole Saved by the Bell thing. I agree. Because it was mind-boggling. He was pointing down at Herb Dean because his mouthpiece came out. So you just magically stop a fight when Anderson Silva is coming at you. You knew you were getting annihilated in that last round. There was nothing you could do. Anderson Silva had an answer for everything you were throwing at him. He backed you up against the cage. And your reaction is, hold on, my mouthpiece is out.
Right, but you don't stop the fight because your mouthpiece is out. Like even Herb Dean said, you don't stop the fight for it. But wait, you stop the fight when he's on the ground? Like, I get Anderson Silva freaking took off and ran halfway across the cage to celebrate a knockout. But I, too, as a correspondent and a journalist and somebody that follows the sport, you know, I see two sides to this. Is that I look at Anderson Silva and I'm thinking, like, this guy should have finished the fight. You knee him. You knock him down. He ain't out by any stretch of imagination. He's not limp. He's not anything. He took a knee to the face and dropped like a sack of potatoes, but he was up against the cage.
And his eyes were still wide-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Right. So in my reaction was, let's go ahead and fight. Let's finish this. But he didn't. Instead, he would rather go celebrate. That's a problem. And then you look at Michael Bisping. And I look at Michael Bisping and like, let's be real about this, Sean. The only way, and I mean the only way, that Michael Bisping, the Count, is remotely anything good on paper, and I say this on paper, is because half his wins have come in his own turf. England, London, whatever. It don't matter. That's the only way he wins. If it goes to the judges, you can guarantee if he's in London or England, he's winning.
But this one wasn't even in his hometown.
I said London or England, Sean. It doesn't matter.
I know.
London or England, he wins.
But it wasn't even there.
It was in London.
Oh.
So, dude, it was in London. And you're like, oh. Shocker.
No, really. So So you look at it and you look what happened in that fight. That's the problem I have with Anderson Silva, though. Why would you drop him with a knee
and not finish the fight?
And not finish the fight. Right. When he clearly was still looking at you after he went down. He didn't even go, like you said, he didn't even go limp. He just went straight down to the mat and he was looking straight ahead. If I was Anderson Silva, it's like, cool, knee, running full tilt, here comes the ball. And it's like, instead he's like, hallelujah. Like, dude,
I was saved. You were literally saved by the graces of God himself. Because, dude, you were done in that round.
Okay, this is a touchy subject. This is a touchy part. Okay?
Is it really?
So I'm going to get in and get out real quick.
That's
so
what
listen,
she said.
So listen very closely. Okay?
Yes.
It's as if Anderson Silva went and prayed to the gods and themselves and said, please award this win to Bisping. That's what happened. He hit him with a knee. He ran to the center, prayed to Jesus himself, and said, please hand it over to Bisping. Bam! That's what happened. See? Our buddy says, from Fightbook MMA says that his eyes were still crossed. Hey, I don't care if his eyes were still crossed or not. He was still looking right at him. He was still coherent.
He might have seen two
of Silva's, but it was still right in front of him.
Still got to finish the fight.
Right.
Still got to finish.
But Anderson Silva prayed to Jesus himself and said, please award it to Bisping because he fought his heart out. He was able to avoid some of my shots. I didn't throw that many strikes. He did. So please give it to him, even though I put his chin into his mouth.
So here is a twist. Plot twist. Let's get this a little bit thick and foamy for the fans.
Thick and foamy for the fans. Way to be inappropriate, Tristan. John, check this out, though, right? So Anderson Silva lost again, right?
Yes.
And I said lost again. How many times have people actually said that they have lost? Remember?
Especially Anderson Silva.
Right. But nonetheless, Anderson Silva has lost now multiple fights, let alone back-to-back fights. So here's a plot twist, Sean. Should UFC release Anderson Silva?
You're higher than flying a kite right now. I mean, a kite, when you get out there and you fly the kite,
it's nice weather out here right now in Temecula,
absolutely,
California.
Absolutely, but there is nothing in the climate that can get the kite up as high as you are right now.
Why not?
Because it's Anderson Silva.
But he's lost back-to-back fights.
It's Anderson Silva.
Back-to-back fights.
Anderson Silva.
But he prayed to Jesus to give a win to Michael Bisping.
Because he had a conscience. It's like passing the torch.
Did he?
So,
he was going to win no matter what. He was in London. All he had to do was show up, and he'll get the W.
Just like what's going to happen on the weekend. Conor McGregor's going to show up and get paid?
No.
That ain't how this works. So, will he get released? Absolutely not. You're just high and on something today. Good to know that you got extra motivated. So, whatever you got motivated with and got high with, please pass it over to me. Because apparently I don't want to get whatever you're on.
You couldn't handle it.
Let's go to Godfather right now.
Right?
But that's where Dana White's going to have to be sitting on his throne right now trying to figure out what will be the next fight for Anderson Silva. Because Anderson Silva says, well, next one, I would like a rematch against Michael Bisping, but in Brazil. And then if we win in Brazil, then I want it in Las Vegas. Do we really want to see three fights of Bisping versus Anderson Silva? Because I think at the end of the results are all going to be the same. Bisping is going to look like he just got messed up in a bar fight.
Like Forrest Griffin?
No, Forrest Griffin just dropped down, cried wolf, ran out of the octagon, and nobody ever saw him again.
Until he found his way at the top of the UFC headquarters.
It is what it is.
Right? But Sean, we still got Bellator 150 fallout. The nightmare isn't so much of a nightmare
Bellator 151 is also coming up. And if Bellator 150 did crazy numbers in ratings, 51 should blow that right out of the water, don't you think? You're listening to the Sports Warriors, the new Cross Brothers, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Be right back after this brief message.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
What's up, everybody? All right, welcome back. You are listening to the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio with your boys, Sean and Tristan DuCross. Sean, Bellator 150. I've been saying it over and over. The ratings were huge. 733,000 viewers, which is the highest in Bellator's non-tentpole event. So again, people are starting to tune in droves. Bellator 150 to be headlined by Chuck Congo after a fallout of their main event and still draw that? Are you serious?
Especially when the main event was a snooze fest.
Right.
And when you've got your main event, basically Mr. Huggy Bear himself, you wonder how the ratings does that. But then you look back on the card and you see exciting fights from Dave Rickles and Kendall Grove. It makes you go, that's why. Just because the main event was blah, you had excitement fights leading up to that.
Dude, but how crazy is it? You just mentioned a fight in Kendall Grove versus Francisco France. France, whatever you want to call his last name. But this fight had such a heartfelt to it, Sean, because Kendall Grove came into this fight just 36 hours after. I mean, he won in 36 seconds, but he lost a family member before this fight. So he came into this fight with a heavy heart, and he dropped the guy in 36 seconds. Kendall Grove is now in a pinnacle point of his career. Because this is what, his second time, I believe, that he has now won in Bellator?
Second straight time where he's won via KO. And this time he ended Francisco in such dramatic fashion that it makes you wonder what is next for Kendall Grove.
And you say what's next is because, dude, he's a free agent.
Exactly, but does he even have a home anymore in the UFC? Is that even in the discussion? I personally don't see how he can go back and be in discussion over in the UFC. I think his skills and his talent level fits what's over at Bellator. I think it fits there, and you've got to watch everything and see what's going on. And when you see Kendall Grove and his lankiness, he's still got some holes in his game. Is that if he doesn't get close, he tends to get rocked. Like in this fight against Francisco, if Francisco was able to keep the distance, he was chopping his leg out.
Right.
I mean, chopping it bad where Kendall Grove was not liking it. But once Kendall Grove cut that distance and became the center of attention in that fight, that's when he unleashed what I call hell. Because once he unleashed hell to Francisco, Francisco had no chance at redeeming himself and ultimately got dropped by Kendall Grove. But I don't see Kendall Grove being a top-level fighter for Bellator.
You see him as a gatekeeper?
That's a tough question.
That's something that I don't feel comfortable really answering at this moment.
Because you still want to see where his career is going if he was able to fully turn around his career.
Yeah, because at one point he was the cream of the crop. He
right.
was at the very top.
And see, because of only two victories, you kind of leave wanting a little bit more from Kendall Grove. And to see Kendall Grove beat a guy like Francisco, I like it on paper, but I don't like it as a fight. So I want to see him up his talent, skills, a little bit more. And that's kind of what I looked for in the David Rickles versus Bobby Cooper fight. Because after Rickles was knocked out by Michael Chandler, we really didn't know what was left for the caveman. We had no idea.
But then they go right back to Kansas, the home area of David Rickles, and David Rickles does what David Rickles does.
Puts on a show.
And he knocked out Bobby Cooper. Dropped him with not one but two knees. Who would have thought that he would have won? Would have won via a knee or knockout for that matter. It's been his first KO since 2013. And when you look at it and you see what's going on, is David Rickles in line for a fight against Michael Chandler to redeem himself?
It's interesting to sit here and talk about Rickles and where he can go. Because this is his first knockout since 2013. The 155 division is stacked. Do you not understand how deep the 155 is? And David Rickles is right there in the middle of the pack. You really got to start running off wins here to get back in that title hunt. Because for David Rickles, it's a legitimate uphill battle for this guy. You want him. You look at him and you're like, he has to get it moving. He has to get it going. But then you look at the 155 group and you're just sitting there like, you feel bad for David Rickles chewing up certain fighters. But to even get back into that hunt, I just don't see enough people at the lightweight division that he can overtrump. Because look,
I think it would be an interesting to see Syed Awad take on a David Rickles. That fight would interest me.
Okay, but that's what I'm talking about. He's in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, Josh Thompson is... You guys don't understand how legitimately stacked the lightweights are. David Rickles, Michael Chandler, Patricky Pitbull, Mercier and Held, Will Brooks. You got Syed Awad, Derek Campos, who's putting on a show lately. Derek Anderson, Brandon Gertz. Are you kidding me? The list could go on. Josh Thompson. These guys are stacked from the top 15 fighters in the lightweight division. It's nothing like you've ever seen before. You don't see a division like the 155 across the bow in other promotions. You don't. So you look at David Rickles and he's just going to have to just keep running off wins. He has to at this point.
And he's got to do it in dramatic fashion. He can't keep going to the decision and not finishing fights.
He has to make his name a household name. And by means of that, I mean that he hasn't knocked, like I said, Sean, he didn't knock out a guy till his last knockout was 2013. He has to now finish guys in dramatic fashion to get people to remember his name, to get the promoters, Chew and them, to understand that this guy is here and he wants a title shot again.
One guy that is clear that is not getting a title shot is Chuck Congo, he's what now this is the guy I'll say, and we love to label these guys every now and again, time to time, when they've been around the game for as long as certain individuals have. I'll say Chet Congo's a gatekeeper. Chet Congo has it all. He's got the looks. He's got the physique. He's got everything you'd want for a heavyweight to be a focal point at the top of the food chain.
But then he walks around like he's a walking zombie.
Yes. You can't win a fight and expect a title shot if you're just hugging your opponent. You just can't do that. He did that against Spartan. And yes, because that's how they labeled him, Spartan. His name is Quirarez. There you go. Quirarez. So they labeled him Spartan. I guess it's because of his name is Vinicus. Who has a name like Vinicus? That's a pretty cool name. Vinicus Spartan. But Spartan dropped him in the third round, I believe it was, with the right hand, even though it didn't really land that hard.
But like Anderson Silva, he didn't finish.
Correct. And Chet Congo, 36 fight experience, knew how to get back up, regain his composure, take it to the grind, and pull out a unanimous decision. I'm sorry, Chet Congo's a gatekeeper. Let's be real on that.
Sean, and the sad thing about Chet Congo is that he has all the tools to become something great. But, again, he wins, still gets the decision. But I'm looking at the heavyweight division, and we knew a guy that was supposed to be the next big thing in Bellator that was going to get that was going to run amok in the heavyweight division. Due to unforeseen circumstances, that's not going to happen now. But what does this say about, and it's not just in Bellator, about the heavyweight division.
It's all across everywhere.
Like, there is seriously a plague that is running through the heavyweight divisions in the UFC, in Bellator, in 1FC, in RFA. Dude, this plague is legit.
Tristan.
This is like the Black Death plague.
Tristan. But the plague has been around for the last 10 years. Basically, since we started doing our show, the plague of the heavyweights have been around since the demise of the Evander Holyfields and the Mike Tysons. Once that era left, heavyweights have never been the same in any field, boxing or MMA. You see guys rise with talent, yes, but that's to the extent of it. You don't see anybody else stepping out of their comfort zone, bringing their A game, and going, oh, my God, that's the next guy. It just isn't there. And it sucks because you got some beast guys that are fighting at the heavyweight level, and they're just there. You use the gatekeeper analogy over and over again. But there's got to be another terminology that you can use for heavyweight divisions. Because it's a lock and key right now. It's like you got to have your documents in order. You have to have a ID card to get into this nightclub. If you don't have any...
It's like the old school Playboy Mansion nightclub. You had to have the Playboy card to get into the nightclub. You had to be dressed to the nines. You have to know somebody to know somebody to know somebody to get in. And that's kind of what the heavyweight division now is in the UFC and in Bellator, is that you need this distinct players club card to get inside.
And then when you're inside, you need to sit at a table with about 10 other dudes and hope that your schlong is bigger than the other guy's schlong, and then you get the first fight first. Where did we just go with this? That's basically what it comes down to. That's how bad the heavyweight division has gotten. You can't hide from reality. That is the reality of the situation. But then you now go over to Bellator 151 this Friday. The reality of Bellator is they've adopted this moniker of the new breed versus the Millionaires Club. Your veterans versus Youth. And you've got the first set, Joe Warren versus Darian Caldwell, the main event in this fight. Dude, Joe Warren, usually known as the baddest man on the planet, right? Now he says that the baddest man on the planet, he's more like the fans' gatekeeper. Like, are you serious right now? Joe Warren, you are still the baddest man on the planet, even at the age of 36. What is interesting about the Caldwell versus Warren fight is the fact that you are looking at the youth versus the veteran. You're looking at what Joe Warren classified as a fan gatekeeper versus the new guy. What's exciting about this fight is that both fighters, what is on the line, is a title shot at 135. And that's the thing, is that if he beats Caldwell, he gets another opportunity against Eduardo Dantas or Galvao. If those two ever can fight. Because Dantas, I believe, got sick last time at 150 and could not fight. So we still have to wait for those two guys to fight. But if Joe Warren wins, he's next in line for a title shot because of Darian Caldwell. Caldwell is 8-0.
5-0 in Bellator.
With him, he's a world-class wrestler, just like Joe Warren. But 4 inches taller, 5 inches more in reach.
But Joe Warren is the baddest man on the planet.
But can he take a knee from Caldwell or the reach advantage and avoid getting taken down by Caldwell? What do they say in MMA, Tristan?
Galvao took him down and slapped on a knee bar.
Not the height advantage of Caldwell.
Right. But I'm just saying, if you look at the height advantage and the wrestling skill of what Caldwell has, Galvao did not have that. All he had was he was a good jits guy. But he was able to slap on the knee bar. So, again, you're looking at Caldwell, who can submit a guy and has done it, has good wrestling skills. I'm looking for Joe to say, you know what, I might want to, at 36 years old, I might want to attempt to use my strength and go to wrestling school 101 and show the youth on how it's done and take the advantage first before Caldwell does. Because if Caldwell does, this is going to be a long night for Joe Warren.
See, and that's what I'm saying, is that what's one thing they say about every wrestler?
They hate facing other wrestlers.
And that is that in order to set up your takedowns against another wrestler is you got to establish that distance.
Yep.
And when you have that 4-inch reach,
it might be a little tough.
I mean, 4 inches taller and you have that 5-inch reach. All you got to do is paw that jab out there. Once you get Warren backing off and understanding about the distance, it'll allow Caldwell, the much younger fighter, to shoot in more aggressively. If Joe Warren wants to beat Caldwell, he needs to get this fight down to the mat. But at the same time, is that Warren needs to pressure quickly.
Yeah, he does.
Needs to get out of the gate and not allow Caldwell to establish that distance. If he can get in that pocket, then you can go ahead and make Caldwell's life a little bit tougher. And that's where the advantage in the veteran, in Joe Warren, and him being the baddest man on the planet comes into play. All he's got to do is not allow Caldwell to establish that distance. But we know is that Caldwell is not a great striker. We've seen him fight twice. And both times, he has not shown the ability to strike on his feet. So now, if Joe Warren is able to get in that pocket and be able to let his hands go and not allow Caldwell to keep that distance, why wouldn't you want to stand and bang with him?
I just feel bad for...
Because you can probably knock him out.
I just feel bad for Joe Warren that he gets this fight for the sheer fact that he wants that title shot so bad. And yet, I'm looking on paper, and I think Caldwell has that advantage. And I'm really pulling for Joe. But, man, he has to seriously go back old school and say that it ain't about that distance. It's not about anything else but sheer will, determination, and skill level.
You know the most annoying thing about Joe Warren is? He doesn't know how old he is. Which is a good thing for him, a bad thing for his counterpart. Exactly. Is that Joe Warren doesn't realize he's in his late 30s. Joe Warren still acts as if he's in his early 20s, still coming at you like a juggernaut.
And see, and you bring that up, and that brings me to a fact that when you're 36, we look at age, and we look at a point of your career where you digress, where you go backwards. And with Joe Warren, he out of sight, out of mind, and that's what makes him fearful. That's what makes him so fear is because he goes out there and he puts in his body of work like he's still 20 years old.
Absolutely. And Joe Warren is the most annoying fighter I've seen in quite some time because when you – look at Joe Warren, you want to say that he's in the middle of the pack. That why is this guy still getting the title shot? But it's like, he loses. Well, for every one he loses, he beats a guy that Bellator is deeming as the top contender. So then he stays at the top of the food chain because he beats your guy who you think should be the guy. It's like the old Ric Flair saying, to beat the man,
you have to beat the man. Right.
You can't beat Joe Warren when he wants to be the baddest man on the planet at any given time. If he looks at himself and says, Bloody Mary, what is it? Bloody Mary three times, and the devil comes out and plays, that's what you're doing with Joe Warren. You don't want to say Joe Warren three times in pitch black staring at a mirror.
And see which Joe Warren you're going to come out. Oh, yeah, it's called the baddest man on the planet. But, Sean, we got... Almost saw chaos ensued this weekend, didn't we? At the 4-point Sheraton, it got a little hostile. Oh, Sean wants to talk about one more fight. Because it's a guy from our backyard. And it's Fernando Gonzalez. Really, you want to talk about that?
Just quickly before we go to the break. Because this has gotten a lot of pub on social media right now with Fernando Gonzalez calling out MVP, and it's like, well, when you look at it, and Michael Venom Page, I can kind of see where Fernando Gonzalez is saying that Michael Venom Page pulled out because he's ducking him. I can kind of see that. You disagreed with that early.
Absolutely, I did.
But when you look at what Bellator type of people have put in front of him, they've padded his stats a little bit more than what should have happened.
And they haven't done it for Fernando?
No. Fernando has fought everybody. That's why he's been legitimately labeled, not by us, but everybody else that has coined the phrase, the gatekeeper. He's been literally the feeding person for every person that has been in Bellator, in the welterweight division.
And he's won 4 straight fights.
Could he be finally putting it all together? Gilbert Smith is an interesting comparison because of the fact that
he's a former world champ.
He is. The last time we saw him several years ago, he had a busted up hand. He had some heavy hands, but he's a good wrestler. Fernando Gonzalez couldn't have asked for a better fight. Michael Venom Page, yes, Fernando Gonzalez. Upgrade over talent that he's fought. But at the same time, he said, you pull back the screen, Michael Venom Page is a lot more difficult for Fernando Gonzalez.
I agree with that.
Because he's unorthodox. He's awkward in the ring. When you look at that...
And Fernando's more of a straightforward brawler, Muay Thai. That's his style. In your face, naturally.
So
I get it. So Gilbert Smith, that's his guy. I get it. But, man, this is going to be intense. Because Bellator 151 is about to just, it should, by all accounts, destroy the ratings numbers that they just currently did. God, I really want to touch on that's going on right now in the chat room, but we're going to go to a break real quick. You are listening to the Sports Warriors with your boys. Sean and Tristan Ducross. Sean, we about to get epic up in here. It almost got very hostile at the 4-Point Sheraton.
More with the Ducros brothers right after this.
Excelsior, Imperius Rex, Live Long and Prosper, Up, Up, and Away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducros Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducros Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com. What's up, everybody? You're listening to Sean and Tristan Ducros, a.k.a. the Sports Warriors, where we have real opinions and only real talk right here on Blog Talk Radio with real opinions. So don't get your panties in a bunch. Just enjoy the show. Relax, no hard feelings here. But Epic 30, local amateur event, went down in our own backyard over the weekend and had some good fights and then left you scratching your head about WTF.
Why do you have to use an acronym?
Because I just don't like to cuss on radio.
We could have said some other word than an acronym.
WTF, man. That's like OMG. LOL.
LMAO.
YOLO.
No. Don't do that.
But apparently you only live once in this world. So you might as well make it count. And Angel Ramirez, we said it last week, we'll say it again this week. The guy's a beast. And when you look at everything that you look for in an amateur fighter and wondering who's going to go pro, who can do this, who can do that. One thing I said last week, the fight of the night, Chance, was Angel Ramirez and Boyko.
Ain't that the truth?
What happened?
What you saw was Angel Ramirez taking Boyko to Suplex City. That's what you saw. And it's funny because we're sitting with one of our guys, Jay Tan, who is one of the people from Buzz TV as well as U of MMA out here in Los Angeles. And he was taking notes down about fighters, and we got to Angel Ramirez's name on the roster. And I leaned over to Jay, and I was like, hey, that guy right there, Angel Ramirez, don't blink. And he's like, why? What do you mean? This guy has ungodly strength. Like, he's Thor strong. Like, if anybody could pick up the Thor hammer out of the ground, Angel Ramirez probably could be that guy. Angel Ramirez picked up Boyko, belly-to-back suplexed him, damn near on his head, and the whole crowd went crazy.
When you can pick up another grown man and heave him halfway across the octagon in a belly-to-back suplex, yeah, that'll get anybody to talk about. And I wish I was joking, but literally, envision it. Belly-to-back suplex, full suspension. Full suspension.
That's like old-school Taz suplex. That's what that was. If anybody knows the wrestler Taz, go back to YouTube. YouTube ECW. YouTube Taz. Suplexes. Look for his belly-to-belly suplexes. Legit, the craziest thing you'll probably see. And I looked at Jay and I said that last time we saw Angel, it was at another amateur event and was Archangel. And that's, he picked him up and threw a guy across the cage. This time he suplexed the guy across the cage. When you're looking at fighters, and you're trying to think about, that's one reason why I love going to these amateur events and covering amateur fighting, is that out here, I don't look at amateur
events the same way that other people do. And I mean that by, because I was, Sean and I, we like to figure out who has the it factor, who potentially is going to go somewhere based off the skill level, based off of his opponent. What are we seeing? We dissect things down to the nitty gritty. Angel Ramirez has that. And then you look at other fighters that are on, that were on this card, and you look, and here's a girl that everybody's going to have to seriously look out. Like, I got text messages that were saying, "Dude, who's the Ronda Rousey lookalike?" Well, the Ronda Rousey lookalike was Madison Michelini, and you talked about her last week that she was somebody you had to be on the lookout for, was Madison Michelini. And sure enough, she came out, took on Rebecca Ireland in what easily could have been another fight of the night candidate.
Who said you had to throw a left?
Right? Because apparently all she did all night was drop that overhand right and just busted up the face of Rebecca Ireland to the point that, and then when the third round came, Rebecca just looked at her corner and said, no moss.
No moss, I'm good.
I'm good, I'm over it. Dude, but you kept saying to me, even the people at 9-9 Jiu-Jitsu out here were laughing because I can't go left. I can't. I can throw like a modified left hook, but to throw a jab or anything like that, it's just not my forte. Get me to go right all day and I'll kill you. That's kind of like Madison. I was like, she was putting a girl with her left hand in a headlock and just willing away with her right. That takes skill. She's a former gymnast. And to see her transition into something like this is incredible. And what's incredible is the fact that Madison broke her right hand in that fight and still went the distance. That shows heart. And for an amateur fighter, you didn't have to keep going, right? But you went ahead and still put on a show for the fans. You were still dropping that overhand right over and over again with authority. Hey, you do you, boo.
But let's also give credit to her opponent and Rebecca Ireland
for taking punishment like she did.
Not only just taking punishment, for taking a fight on 12 days, for this being her first fight, and she had to face a beast incarnate.
Okay, Brock Lesnar.
I was being Paul Heyman.
Whatever. They're one of the same.
Paul Heyman doesn't talking.
Man, it doesn't matter. They're still Team Paulie Dangerously.
But Madison, her opponent, it's crazy to see that Rebecca, yes, she quit on the stool. I get it. But, man, she hung in there tough, though, because she was taking some brutal punches.
And she was trying to clinch, and she was trying to do her part, Rebecca was. She was able to weather the storm for as long as she can. I gave her props for that, for her first fight, and being able to take a beating like she did. She has the potential, kind of like Lacey Loves does. You see some things with potential. Just got to iron out the kinks and continue to work for it. Once you continue to do that, they'll find their rhythm. They'll find their way. That's what you hope you're going to see with Rebecca Ireland, just like you hope to see with Lacey Loves. And then you come to the controversial fight of the night.
I'm sorry. I still immediately start laughing about this.
Daniel Molina versus Jose Campos.
Oh, that's not... Wow.
Jose Campos was awarded the win in what I classified as the BS decision of the evening.
I agree with that.
Daniel Molina did more damage and more striking throughout the fight than Jose Campos did. Jose Campos was landing some shots in the third round, and that's when he won that round. But in the second round, the first round is all Molina. Second round, I maybe could have gone either way, but I gave it to Molina that he outstruck Campos, took Campos to the ground.
Again, you know, because we sit there and we don't just say, you know what, this is what we see, this is how we call it. No. We literally break down every single thing. And we love talking to everybody about, well, what's their opinion on this fight? What do you see? How do you judge this? What do you, you know? And I immediately went and spoke to one of my boys that is one of the judges,
the refs at the event, and I was like, hey, we're scoring it for Molina. What the heck are you guys seeing? And the way that it was broken down to me was the fact that from their standpoint, every single time Molina tried to go in for a shoot, every single time Molina tried to throw a punch, there was that counter by Campos.
See, and I just didn't see it.
Right.
Maybe it was my vantage point that I was out of position and I didn't see it. But I didn't see the counter shots that everybody else was saying that was happening. Even at our table, people were voting for Campos that he was one. Maybe it's because they're camp and they're oblivious to what was going on. I don't know. But all I know is that at the end of the day, I did not score it for Campos.
But I'm telling you right now, though, Manilo Hernandez, Hurricane, out here in San Diego, dude, he has to be very pleased between what we saw at True Form Entertainment from Daniel Molina to now. Vast improvement.
And just got to work on his gas tank, though.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's the only thing he has to work on is his gas tank. But, man, between then and now, huge improvement in his striking game and his improvement in his footwork.
And just like it was a huge improvement from this card to the previous two cards.
But then we lost it all when we got to the main event of the evening.
That was supposed to be Christian Leon.
And see, key word there, Sean, you said supposed to be.
Because it was canceled due to the fact that...
Time ran out.
Because underneath amateur regulations, you cannot fight past 12 o'clock unless you have two-day insurance. So Epic only paid for apparently one day of insurance and had to cancel the main event fight that everybody wanted to see. And it kind of put a damper on the whole night because this was by far the best fight card that Epic has put on in quite some time.
Hands down.
To be ruined essentially by the inability to put the last fight on. You could have canceled one of the other fights early on. You could have cut back on the intermissions. You could have done so much because this had everything you wanted.
Right.
The team of Epic did a great job with the fight card.
But then this just puts a sour taste in your mouth, not only for the fight fans, but the organization in itself, is because apparently, now we've only been a part of it one time, and it was this one time, but apparently this has happened before. Where they've ran short, but man, there was so much chaos ensuing about this.
Yeah, especially when it became 11:58, and you're trying to figure out what's going on here as they're rushing the fighters in to not seeing the fighters come in. It was just all chaos. The referees packing up, ready to go. If you didn't know about the time, as fight fans, you were confused, disoriented, not knowing what was going on and why certain things were going on. So the bottom line of this is that the fight was canceled due to the fact of no insurance. And after 12 o'clock, because we were told that if you bought two-day insurance, the fight would have happened. It would have continued. Insurance was only bought for one day. Fight couldn't continue. Camo underneath camo regulation.
Rules
said fight could not happen. Fight could not happen. They tried everything to try to make it happen, either offering a grappling match, offering to fight one round. Nothing worked. So the fight fans kind of left a bitter taste in their mouth after what transpired.
And it also left and after the event, you know, we talked to a lot of camps about this. And for everything that to happen, the amount of anger that came from camps or came from fighters that were talking to myself or you, Sean, it was incredible.
And that's the thing.
Like, we were walking around outside the event and we were literally getting stopped and getting spoken to from fight fans, from fight camps, from fighters, and just going off and asking us, what do we think? What do they do? What's going on? And we're just like,
and us kind of just absorbing it,
right,
is basically the only thing we can do.
Correct.
We don't want to say too much, just like we don't want to say too much right now.
Correct. Only you can figure it out. Only you can make clarify everything and make it right by the fans.
And the fighters and the gyms, only you can do that. So, but I'll just say this, for what it was, if you get the sour taste out of your mouth,
it
by
was
far the best fight.
By far the best card that Epic has put on in recent times. You know, since when Team Arena, if you want to go all the way back to like Epic 26 when Team Arena was running amok in Epic, that's when fights were at its best. When you had Devin Taylor running the course, when you had Alex Trinidad, when you had Raheer Dudes, when you had all them guys fighting and running amok, that's what you wanted. And that's kind of what it brought back, the old days of Epic. And just this one nugget to kind of put a damper on a great show was kind of just a mood killer. Fans booing, leaving the arena, it's not something that you wanted, especially for something that you just put on that was incredible.
So the biggest thing I'd suggest is build on what you did successful
right.
with the fights. Build on that. And if you're going to do start an hour later, cut the middle portion out, or go ahead and get two-day insurance. There's several things you can do. Build on this success. Do that. You'll be good. And hopefully the sourness, the bitterness, it disappears, because when you look past that, it was a good
great
night
show.
Of fights.
Right.
It was a great show. You got to give props to them. They put on one hell of a fight card up until that point. So with that being said, guys, hold strong. Do what you guys do.
And so now, Sean, coming up next, we got that Conor McGregor swag talk coming up.
More with the new Cross Brothers, the Sports Warriors, right here on Block Talk Radio.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
What's up, everybody? We are back. We are the Ducross Brothers, the Sports Warriors. Along my side, as always, is my brother, Sean Ducross. I'm Tristan Ducross. Sean, incredible show. All the way up until now, we're wrapping up the show. But we still got to talk about the biggest issue that everybody's talking about. Is that, dude, this is why UFC is allowing Conor McGregor to do what Conor McGregor is doing. ESPN little stints he has going on, dropping by college room dorms and showing people that he's the effing king, talking to the media, selling out a open mat. Are you serious? Like, do you not understand that it's an open mat and you can't even walk to see him?
Do you know how awesome it would be that on March 5th Conor McGregor comes out to, this is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. That would be fantastic. Because that fits Conor McGregor right now in his stature with UFC and everything else. And our boys in the chat room are probably going, I've never heard of that song. But just in case, you can go ahead and Google. Mims, this is why I'm hot. And you can find the lyrics as well as, well, it kind of makes reference to Conor McGregor.
Don't rap for me, please.
I can't rap.
Okay.
I can talk the lyrics and sound retarded doing it. So go ahead. I'll do it for you. This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. Because I'm fly. You ain't because you're not. Well, in this case, I'll change out the words from Mims to
You're not Conor McGregor. You're not Conor McGregor. That's why I'm hot. That's what's going to be done. And if I were Conor McGregor, just go out, find Mims.
Have him change the lyrics to this. You
came out with Sinead O'Connor. Somebody remake Mims. Well, this is what I'm hot to. Why I'm hot, Conor McGregor. Perfect sense. But everybody's not giving Nate Diaz, the American Ninja, due diligence.
He makes gang signs with his right hand and balloon animals with his left hand. Can't we just all get this right?
Because he's a fake ninja?
Yes. He rides bicycles with grandmas. Didn't you know that?
I knew that. Everybody knew that.
I mean, he makes special brownies for the grandmas. Come on. That's what he does. And you know what's funny? He's going to get paid. He's going to face Conor McGregor. He's going to test positive. And he's going to be done in the UFC.
You know, there's this one show that is called Fit to Fat. That's what a show is that my wife and I watch. Fit to Fat. A fitness trainer who's trimmed up, blooms up by eating food, fatty foods, and then he trims right back down at the end of it while he's training some overweight person. Kind of looks like the same thing that Conor McGregor's doing, but while staying trimmed. If you watch Fit to Fat, when you eat, you can't really work out that often. So how is he still staying so trimmed while putting on weight to get to 170?
Because he ate steak instead of solids.
Clearly.
Hey, that's what he says.
Either A,
what's his diet? Well, I don't eat salads anymore. I eat steak. That's what he said. Dude, he even said on ESPN today that he was like, so, how's your diet going? Well, I have already had breakfast. I had a second breakfast. Matter of fact, as I'm talking to you right now, they're about bringing in my third breakfast. What? How do you have three breakfasts in one? You can't do that. You can't. So what's an interesting standpoint is that regardless of where you go or you come from, he is standing at the top of the mountain, folks.
And he's going to get the biggest test of his lifetime.
I disagree with that.
Nate Diaz is going to be his worst nightmare. Like I was telling you earlier, is that I could see Conor McGregor winning this fight a lot easier if Nate Diaz was fighting in his realm, in his weight class.
Can you?
But when you're going up to Nate Diaz's weight class, where he's been at, where he lives at 170, and you oblige, you're in for your biggest test. The Diaz brothers are no pushovers. Yes, they sometimes don't put on the best shows.
But that's because they don't get paid. And according to Nate Diaz, he doesn't care.
See, and then
he doesn't get paid.
And then that's my concern right there with this fight.
Is because he's finally getting paid?
Will he show up to fight?
Because he's getting paid.
Yes.
Gilbert Melendez said that it took them 3 days. And this is, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around this because, okay. So somebody needs to really explain this to me. It took them 3 days to negotiate a contract for Nate Diaz to face Conor McGregor. But the timestamps then are all wrong. All sorts of wrong. Because right after RDA withdrew, we heard everybody coming out of the woodwork saying, I want to fight Conor McGregor. Then I heard that, well, Conor McGregor handpicked Nate Diaz. He didn't want to fight Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar was fat. He didn't want it. Jose Aldo said, forget it. I don't want it. Everybody said, I didn't want it. Wait. What's going on here?
And we talked about that.
Because then you have a 3-day timestamp that somewhere they got to hold of Nate Diaz and negotiate a contract for 3 days.
So how much of that was a ploy?
What happened was the fact is that Dana White, as Jose Aldo, said no because he was fat. As Frankie Edgar was hurt. RDA pulled out. He went to Nate Diaz. That's what we do know. I'll say that's truth. Went to Nate Diaz and asked if Nate Diaz wanted to fight. Why? Because what did Nate Diaz do on Fox TV?
Call him out.
Exactly. Let the whole world know how much he hates Conor McGregor. So when everybody else says no or can't do it for one way or the other, you go after the guy who's going to sell the fight, Nate Diaz. You just hope that because this is the biggest payday Nate Diaz is going to get, that he's not just showing up to collect a paycheck like the Diaz brothers have been known to do before. Nate Diaz, his last biggest paycheck was against RDA.
Dude, and
against Rafael Dos Anjos. And what happened? Dos Anjos gave him a beating of a lifetime. A lifetime. Nearly killed the kid in the octagon because he beat him so bad.
And see, that's what I was just going to get to. How bad would it be for Nate Diaz to absolutely get destroyed by Conor McGregor?
That's what I'm saying.
How devastating could that be?
It could go so many different ways. And again, another nod about how these guys take paydays. Look what happened. Anderson Silva, Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz's highest paid day. And what did he do? He embarrassed himself in front of the world on pay-per-view against Anderson Silva.
And got suspended.
But he got paid.
Correct. And got suspended.
So you're hoping it's not about money for those two. That there are, that Nate Diaz is nothing like Nick. And that Nate Diaz really wants to put on a fight and take it to Conor McGregor and shut him up and be the guy to shut him up. But at the end of the day, if he just goes in there, showboats, collects a payday, or in Conor McGregor says, we'll see who's going to talk the most. We're not going to get a fight that everybody wants to see.
Dude, the thing is that, look, Nate Diaz right now, in my eyes, and like Conor McGregor, dude, he is timid as heck right now. Because Nate Diaz is a talker, has been, always has been, Sean.
And now he's not.
But now, magically, he can't talk.
He can't talk the talk.
Where's that Frozen song?
Let it go, let it go.
Yeah, right? At some point, you have to. But Nate Diaz, Sean, this isn't the Nate Diaz we're used to. He's not talking. He's not popping off at the mouth. He's not talking about the money. He's not talking about the Stockton slap. He ain't talking. And last time we saw somebody that didn't talk, who was it, Sean? Last time, the last person that did not talk, that all they did was talk, 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 was Ronda Rousey. But yeah, she was this calm person and got her head knocked off by Holly Holm. Against Holly Holm, and she got her head kicked off.
And that's where I come in saying that you look at this fight, it could go the way that Holly Holm beat Ronda Rousey. The unexpected can happen. But will the unexpected happen in a Holly Holm versus Misha Tate? Misha Tate has all the tools. Has all the tools to beat Holly Holm. Has the ability to take the fight to the ground. Not afraid to stand in front of her and bet. Holly Holm is the pure boxer. The stylistic matchup that if she can defend the takedown, she's going to beat Misha Tate. Misha Tate needs to learn what Ronda Rousey did wrong. Don't let Holly Holm establish the distance. If Holly Holm established that distance and she controls the fight, she will go ahead and dominate that fight.
Let's go, Cupcake.
Then you look over at Holly Holm and you wonder how much pressure is on her after this fight to go, well, is she a one-hit wonder? How much pressure is on her to make sure she does not look like a one-hit wonder? That's a lot of pressure on her. So it'll be interesting to see her at weigh-ins to see what her demeanor is going into this fight as well as what she looks like coming out to the octagon against Misha Tate. How much pressure can she withstand?
Well, here's the thing. How much pressure was there at Lion Fight 28 when the nephew of Melvin Manoff, Cedric Manoff, took on Joe Nawat? And again, we go all the way back to the beginning of the show when if you knock somebody out, finish the fight. Finish the fight. And Cedric Manoff did not do that, and Joe Nawat systematically took him apart all the way through the fight and ended up retaining his title. I mean, you're looking at a vast variety of fights that all tie into each other, Sean. And it's only going to get better the more and more we keep, you know, diving into the combat sports world, because it's growing at a rapid pace. With the fact that you now will pretty much 90% of the time now, Sean, you're going to hear about Lion Fight Muay Thai right here on the Sports Warriors, because I'm going to say that we're the home of Lion Fight right now.
Maybe we can ask Scott Cannon for the home next time we
right?
interview
him. Lion Fight 28, Cedric Manoff was on that. Nick Chastain was on that.
And he lost.
Right.
Like, whoa, didn't see that one coming. But, so, we're on our way out here. Everybody that has listened to our show, thank you very much for tuning into us. I just want to make a bold prediction, though, for UFC 196.
What do you got?
I've got Misha Tate.
Yep.
And I've got Nate Diaz.
I'm going to go with a new bantamweight champion and Misha Tate. Got her hands down. Sorry, Holly Holm. Sorry, Ronda Rousey. That rematch ain't going to happen.
I just feel like making bold predictions. I'm probably going to be wrong on the Holly Holm Misha Tate.
First round knockout, Conor McGregor.
You're going Conor McGregor?
Conor McGregor, first round knockout.
Second round, TKO, Nate Diaz. Boom. What's happening?
We are the Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio. Until next time, we are out. You can find us on Twitter, at the Duke Cross Bros. Find us on Facebook, Sean and Tristan Duke Cross. Hit us up on our fan page, Duke Cross Brothers. Till next time, we're out.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Duke Cross.